by Liza, and he spoke and asked our esoteric questions. So, and on all kinds of extraordinary things. On Arabic alchemy in Andalusia, on Byzantine alchemy in Constantinople and Istanbul. And now we're going to hear a little about Alexandrian alchemy. So, great to have Brian here.
And Alexandria. I would imagine that everyone here has probably heard of alchemy in one way, one form, some way or another, right? And I'm sure we all have some kind of an idea as to what it is. Well, what any of those ideas may be, probably more likely some sort of a spiritual tradition, perhaps maybe even a physical process, changing metals into gold and so on and so forth. Whatever idea you may have about it, all of its origins start in Alexandria. This was the place where, as you've been hearing all night, just these incredible streams, these incredible ideas, these incredible technologies and practices, all sort of filtered into Alexandria. And it's here where we have the idea of alchemy as its origins, as I said. Just to give sort of the general definition of alchemy, just so we're kind of on the same sort of a plane. Is the idea of transmutation, okay? Either on something physical or something more abstract. That tends to be what most people kind of think of it as. In its early origins in Alexandria, what it's drawing from primarily is an ancient Egyptian technology, right? In ancient Egypt, you don't really find, and I don't think there are too many texts that even talk about the transmutation aspects of things. It doesn't seem to quite exist. What you will find, and probably the only documentary evidence that's around, were these two manuscripts that were found, found in the mummy's tomb. These mummies were from, like, say, the 3rd century AD, so it's a rather contemporary, rather recent finding, I guess. But what they found were these recipe books, essentially. And when you read them, they read just like that. It's almost like artisanal manuscripts or formula books, both for pharmaceuticals as well as ones as how to make bronze look like a really good gold. Right? You'll find things in there where they talk about painting these things and making the appearance of something else. So there was never really an idea of anything being transmuted, although within some of the deeper ideas of, say, some of the Egyptian religions, you have that, of transmutation, of Osiris, resurrection, and so forth. But nor do you find it necessarily in the actual metalworking. And that's what Egypt was actually really well known for. In any museum you go to, you see the metalworking, you see the glassworks, you see all these things. And these were crafts, and these were hidden. Okay, you had to be initiated into these things, as in most of these kind of early technologies, was an initiation, was sort of a craft thing. So you have that as the kind of the practice. Throughout Egypt, as well as throughout the Mediterranean, you had these in 1000 BC, 1500 BC, 2000 BC. These almost, and actually there was a very recent discovery about it, 2-3 years ago in Cyprus, of an actual sort of industrial site. That is, I think, measures almost like, say, what would be like two New York City blocks. And on this site, and this dates to about 2000 BC, on the site they found areas for metalworking, for textile dyeing, and perfume, resins, things like that. Its major export was to Egypt, but all the technology is here. And some of the interesting things they're finding, particularly within some of the metalworking, is that they were working with gold at temperatures, using olive oil to heat it, okay, which burns at about, not to get too nerdy here, but about 600 degrees, whereas gold belts at about 2000 or so, very rare, roughly speaking. So they had some kind of technology working with salts, working with temperatures and ways to create these furnaces. So you have this technology, okay, which is going on, and that's the backdrop of it. But in Alexandria, okay, where a lot of these ideas are coming together, you also have, as we heard, the Neoplatonists, Hermeticists, so on and so forth. And what they were seeing was that as these ideas started to fuse together, alchemy wasn't so much this idea of just transmutation of matter, okay, even though it started to develop into that. It was a way of examining the world, okay, and a way of examining yourself, and a way of working with this. And that the materials and the processes that were being used, they were actually working on things. This is kind of the hard part for us to kind of get sometimes, is that they were actually working on things. And alchemy just wasn't a metaphor for something. Okay? When you were working on these processes, you were taking a metal, you were putting it from one thing to the other. At the same time, you were also engaged in it within yourself. That there really wasn't this sort of a separation. It was a way of kind of demonstrating these inner principles. Right? You can kind of see this within mathematics or music. You could have even used music in this way. Music is a real thing. It exists, you can play, you can perform, what have you. But you can also start to analyze it. Okay? You can start to look at it as revealing or showing a deeper order, a deeper structure. And in understanding that, you come to these moments, as we heard before, where you get this kind of a moment of insight in the working of it. And this is what alchemy was doing. Okay? It worked with materials, but these materials were symbols. But it's not like as we would think of a symbol today, where it's like, okay, it's something outside of yourself, it's something over here and pointing to something. No, the material itself was a symbol. And what it was revealing in itself were these deeper orders. And by working with these processes, you can start to unveil that, as well as move yourself closer to these kind of, you know, aha moments of insight, of even a possible kind of a revealing with the divinity, or something like that. One of the workshops I want to do in Alexandria, if you all could come, because that's where it's really going to get actually kind of interesting, is on site. What I want to do is, the amount of material that still exists, as we've heard, is very, very little. Right? So what you need to do is almost piece a little bit together from one text, another piece from another text, and so on. We've all heard of the Emerald Tablet, right? As above, so below, you know, the Father is the Son, so on and so forth. And what it describes is, it's considered the root text of alchemy. It describes the process of creation. The earliest translation, or the earliest evidence we have of it, is about 600-800 AD, around that range. And it's an Arabic translation. It's an Arabic version of it. And what I want to do in this one particular workshop is to take a look at the Emerald Tablet and look at its earliest translation, as well as a couple of other ones, and explore some of the Hermetic ideas within that. This idea of taking something from one place, decomposing, bringing it through the process, and then releasing and elevating up. And this is the idea within it, which is being shown within the Emerald Tablet in a somewhat symbolic, kind of almost coded sort of form. The other thing I want to look at, and anybody involved in this will take a look at it too, because it's a very interesting text by a woman alchemist named Cleopatra, not Cleopatra of Liz Taylor fame. This is another Cleopatra. It was a very common name back then. And this was written at about 100 AD. And in this passage, there's a moment there that echoes almost identically what is being said in the Emerald Tablet. But in this one text, she's speaking very specifically about a technical process of hers. And you start to see this linkage now with a Hermetic text, something that is ascribed to her. The third text that I want to bring into this, which is when I came across it, it's actually quite remarkable. It's from the Gnostic Nag Hammadi Library, and it's the Apocryphon of St. John. There is a kind of across the... We'll read them together, essentially. We'll read them against each other. And as well as doing that, compare it and illustrate it with some actual laboratory experiments and to show some of the processes that were actually going on through here. Okay? And in doing this, I think what will start to come through is, I think, one of the hardest things for us today is this idea of spirituality and the material world, sort of being one, or having this vision of unity of this. It's a hard thing, I think, but in working like this through these texts, through the different processes that we'll get into there, I think we can start to get to this moment of it starts to break through and you have this kind of an aha, where you begin to start to see exactly maybe what they were talking about in terms of the materials, the substances themselves, as well as the processes being symbolic. Okay? And in that symbolism, showing a path all the way back. And this is what it was pretty much about. Okay? It starts to get rather vast without getting into some background. So I don't want to do that right now, because I think we're kind of running out of time here. That's what I thought. So I'm just going to leave it here, okay? Kind of tell you all to come to Alexandria, because that's where it's all going to happen. This is just sort of the warm-up, I guess, to kind of get the juices flowing. And I guess we can just sort of open it up for questions and answers.
Yeah, so this is what I thought. It is approaching 9:30, but I'm sure some of us want to stick around for questions. I'm sure some of us may need to go. So before those who need to go can go, and those who want to stay can stay, and we can Richard and Brian and I can respond to questions, and we can start a conversation. Let me just say one other thing, which is we've done an esoteric quest every year for the last 4 or 5 years. There was a little bit of a gap in the early 2000s, but this year we're actually not going anywhere because something of the scope of Alexandria requires significant preparation. But in August, the last weekend in August, we're going to do a homegrown esoteric quest. Not in Alexandria, not in Florence, not in Granada, not in Samothrace, but right here in New York City, right here at the Open Center. And so, we New Yorkers forget that New York is an exotic destination for a lot of people, especially California. So people do. So I just want to, it'll appear in the Open Center catalog. It'll be coming up. I'm just calling it the New York City Esoteric Gathering. We did Inner America last year. That's where Richard spoke about Emerson. And of course, next year we're going to do Alexandria. So we'll tie up whatever loose threads there are from Inner America last year. We'll look ahead to Alexandria next year. And we'll also just take stock of the present moment, because when I look back on doing that first conference on the Western Esoteric Tradition back in 1995 in a little town called Český Krumlov, the southern Bohemian Mecca of alchemists that had been hidden behind the Iron Curtain for 50 years and nobody knew anything about it, there was nothing going on in terms of conferences on Western esotericism. Now it's booming! It seems like barely a week or a couple of weeks go by without me getting another email about some of academia is waking up to it, which of course is a mixed blessing. Because on the one hand, we need the academy to take it seriously. On the other hand, you get all the trips that come with academia and so on, which we don't need to go into right now. But anyway, so we're going to take stock of the fact that it's a special time. That a lot of this stuff, whether it's Neoplatonism, whether it's alchemy, whether it's the Hermetic, Gnostic, Rosicrucian, all et cetera traditions, these things are coming alive right now. And so we want to take stock. Chris Bamford, some of you know Christopher Bamford, he will kick things off on the Friday night, speaking just about esotericism today. So it'll be a Friday night, you can come to the Saturday, you can come to the Sunday. We'll break it all up, you can come to the whole thing, of course, or you can come to segments of it. But our goal will be that it is not just a conference, it's really, I'm preferring to call it a gathering, because these are these events have always been characterized by a high measure of conviviality. It's about warmth and love and good vibes actually permeating our whole engagement with this material. This is not an academic, an abstract academic exercise. So we will go out for dinner together. We'll have a banquet together on Saturday night. Mitch Horowitz will lead whoever wants to go on a walking tour of Esoteric New York. We'll have fun. In other words, it'll be a fun weekend. So look out for that in the Open Center catalog or on the Open Center website, opencenter.org. It's the last weekend in August, and it'll be right here. Unfortunately, Brian won't be there because he'll be in Rome researching more Egyptian stuff and working in the whole realm of film that he does, but Richard will be there.
Well, here's a transition for you.
Yeah.
In 1870, Emerson went to Egypt, and he was on the Nile, and he went to the Giza Plateau first, saw the Sphinx, and he looked up at the Sphinx, and he said, "You too." And then he went down the Nile, and he came to the, he was on the boat, saw the great Temple of Philae, which has now been moved because of the dam. And he said, "Gee, I'd really like to get over there this morning." And this young lad who was traveling along on the same boat said, "I'll take you over, sir." And they went over, and it turned out the young lad was a 12-year-old Theodore Roosevelt, who took Emerson over to the temple.
So what I suggest is, let me just say one more thing. For those of you who would like to know more about what we're planning in Alexandria, there's a website called esotericclass.org. And pretty soon, I'm just start writing it next week, but you know, pretty soon the brochure for next year's class will be up. And the website has information. There's a newsletter called Class News. It has interviews. There's an interview with Leonard George about Alexander. There's an interview with David Feidler coming up, the person I mentioned, who published a regular volume on Alexander for quite a number of years. So if those of you, if you feel attuned to this theme, I suggest that you subscribe, or I think there's a place on that website, esotericclass.org, where you can put your name, and then we'll be able to pass on all the information about next year's class as it arises. I can just say it's an incredibly it's an overwhelming experience, I would say, actually, to create an event on ancient Alexandria, because you have such a plethora of things to choose from, and people who want to speak there. It's just like, oh my God, what do you, I mean, it's just huge, because as I was saying, there's literally, you could do conferences for the next decade without really having to strain yourself as that much material, as I'm sure you've got a hint of from tonight. So let me just say that I suggest that whoever wants to needs to go on, leaves right now, and that the rest of us will stay and will respond to questions. So, should we do that? Thank you.